Welcome to Deep Hall of Fame, brought to you by One Truck America. That's onetruck.us. We're going to have an excited episode. We have someone that's going to talk about cross-border with Mexico and some of the challenges that you've had going across it. But before, as always, we're going to talk about what's going on this week. And I'm sure everyone's aware that Fred Smith, the person that started FedEx, passed away. He's kind of one of the pioneers of our industry that has done a lot in growing that part of the industry. He's one of the formidable people. And I think he was at FedEx for, I think he retired probably about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. But he's definitely, it was a game changer. Other than that, we don't have a whole lot going on. The tariffs have actually settled down. And I think you have a large amount of freight heading this way. But I think that should follow up with the surge season that's coming, which is your normal Christmas season. How busy is that going to be? It really comes down to how much spending you're going to have in the U.S. No one can really tell you what that looks like yet. But it's one of the good things that came out, even with the conflict in Iran, is that the price of oil, which the barrel of oil, which affects diesel prices, which is why you guys care, has actually dropped back to almost $62 today. So everyone, whenever there's a conflict, you would see a spike in oil that gets you somewhere. I think it got as high as 72, 73, but it dropped back down to 62. And some of it is because we are producing a lot of oil. We're not just a importer of oil anymore. So it doesn't affect us as much as it did in the past. So pretty light week in what's going on in the industry, but I want to keep you updated. And I'm looking forward for this great episode with Caesar. So welcome to the Hall of Fame. Welcome to the Hall of Fame podcast with Ken Miller. We have Cesar Marquez, who is an expert on cross-border operations. And I think with what's going on right now with Mexico and the U.S., it's someone that I think everyone is concerned. How do I get my freight across? Are there any issues? Are there things I need to expand on? He's going to enlighten us on all that. That's especially that. That's what he does. He has a company that actually concentrates just on that. With that said, Cesar, introduce yourself, sir.
Hey, my name is Cesar Marquez. I am an entrepreneur, and also I've been working for other companies, 3PLs, all to do with cross-border freight related to cross-border. I've been doing this for over 25 years. I'm native of Laredo, Texas, crossing. I lived in the Mexico side, and I lived in the U.S. side. So I'm truly bilingual, and I'm looking forward to helping you all.
All right, great. With that said, let's just start off right where things are now. Right now, there's obviously a lot of tension between Mexico and the U.S., but at the end of the day, there's still, and I think you wrote an article, and he's also a contributing writer for One Truck America. We'll link his article below. But talk about there are $5 billion in goods. I think you stated in your article. I'll let you
correct that. 518.
518. All right. Yes. So
that's just as the import side.
Just an import, no problem.
Expand to me. Product from Mexico into the U.S.
All right, perfect. So expand to me, explain to me, what should someone moving stuff across the border today be concerned about, advice, anything of that nature? It's all yours.
Well, right now, obviously, we have daily in the border about 20,000 trucks cross the border. And I'm talking about north and south. So every day, and especially that's just in Laredo, Texas. So Laredo, Texas handles about 63% of the freight coming across the border. That's the most important port from north and south, okay? Then we have other ports like McAllen, which does a lot of produce. And then we have, obviously, Tijuana, which is near California, down in the western side, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some of the things that people worry about is, number one, is security, right? I mean, that's one of the things that most shippers worry about, the freight getting stolen or something happening to the freight coming across the border, being hijacked or anything like that. But the reality is that's very small percentage of freight that comes across the border that's actually, you know, damaged or hijacked, you know?
Okay.
The majority of the products that come across the border are for manufacturing. A huge percentage of freight that comes across the border for manufacturing. And, you know, the automotive industry is really, really heavy, as I shared in my article, about the percentage of freight that comes across as for mostly widgets, parts, you know, bolts, things that you need to go ahead and do the manufacturing across the border when it relates to the automotive sector, right? Mm-hmm. We also have a lot of machinery that comes across, which John Deere, all the big players are down in Mexico. But they have a very streamlined and deep relationship with carriers down in Mexico. And the reality is that very small percentage of the freight gets damaged or, you know, stolen or anything like that when it comes across the border.
Okay. And I would agree with that. And I think it's not finished goods. So it's not something who's really wants and wants a bolt. So Mike, I have a couple of follow-up questions. Okay. Has anything changed if I'm moving freight across the border prior to the border security thing, which has nothing to do with freight because everything is moving is illegal, but right. just with the amount of people at the border, the military at the border wall, and the trade things, has anything changed? Can I move the freight the same way I did last year or this year? Is there any new policies out there? That's really what my viewers are curious about.
There's a lot of talk about the tariffs and what the tariffs do to certain products. And I think that the majority of the products that are being affected are products that are now manufactured within the North American Trade Agreement, which is then USMCA right now. So most companies have already very deep agreements when it relates to automotive and when it relates to those things. You know, especially the automotive sector, they have negotiated with Mexico what can it go in and what can I go in. For example, I'll give you an example. One of the things that automotive uses a lot is racking systems, right? The racking systems come out on trailers already loaded, all to deliver and plants in Michigan. They arrive to Michigan. Those racks have to return, and they're steel. You know, they're actually steel, right? So those products already have agreements with Mexico how those products are going to re-enter the country under the law, under agreements.
All right, you went to the automotive industry. Let's talk about that because I put out some couple of articles. Like I always butcher this name. I think it's Stellantis, and I remember they make Dodge and so forth.
That's right.
They've talked about shutting down parts of their Mexican plants, and there's also someone else that thought about shutting it down and moving it to the U.S. Does that concern you at all? Do you see that happening? There are two articles on this, and I will link them that specifically have come out about moving it just because of the tariff itself. So do you see any movement of that?
I think that, to be honest, if they're going to do it, it's not going to be something immediate. It has to be something planned and thought out. Mm-hmm. The manufacturing process, included in the plants in Mexico, let's keep in mind that automotive has made big investments into Mexico. You know, not only the investments on technology, but also training their people down when they're working in Mexico. And most people think that you know, they just go down there and they just go ahead and hire the majority of people from that country. But it's not true. I mean, there's a lot of people who go from the United States to do the training, to go ahead and facilitate all that training in Mexico too, for the tooling, for the plants, for everything else. So even though there's a lot of talk of some certain products coming back into the United States, the reality is going to be thought out, processed, and you know, if something's coming back, it's something that can really be done in the United States, including you know, metals, aluminum, and things like that.
I don't think it was necessarily, and I'll send it to you after. I don't have it in front of me, and I can't look now. I think they were talking about as a production that there were some vehicles from Dodge and stuff that were made in Mexico that they were going to move back.
Correct.
It wasn't necessarily the nuts and bolts of it, and I didn't get into that part. But I'll send you both after. But let's move on. Let's move on. Uh-huh. I wrote an article the other day. I was reading about a freight bridge, and I think it was right outside of Laredo, and I'll send that to you. That freight could just freely come over, and I'm gathering this is on the rail, okay?
Yes,
without going through the process. Do you know anything about that project? Can you expand on it?
I grew up about 2 miles from it.
Perfect. There you go. Tell me about this freight bridge.
They recently expanded that bridge, by the way.
I know. That's why I wrote the article, because it had been around for 2 years or so, but they really expanded it. And I'll send it to you after. And I should have said you before. Sorry about that. Go ahead. Tell me what you know.
Well, so we're talking about Kansas City Southern now, Canadian freight, right? The Canadians recently bought Kansas City Southern. So when you talk about trains, so if you think about a train, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, train is not like a truck that is going to go ahead and cross the border, right? So the trains are pre-clear and before the whole train comes across. Right.
Yes.
So, and a lot of those products are not necessarily, they're pre-clear and also come into perhaps free trade zones. I mean, Kansas City has a huge trade zone that is promoted, that it talks about, because that once those products come into the United States and if they go into free trade zones, then the United States can go ahead and utilize them in a way that it makes sense. Right.
Yes.
You pay duties and taxes A lot of that freight also comes in bond. So once the bonds, you know, are clear, they can go ahead and be delivered into cities in the United States. Automotive sector. So,
yeah. All right. Hey, let me just, this is not for you. This is for my viewers. Let me explain what he's saying. The Canadian National Railroad merged with the KCS Railroad. It's now one railroad. So now you can run freight from Central Mexico all the way to Toronto, Montreal, wherever you want to go. Right. They have an inland port in Kansas City and an inland port in Chicago. Let me tell you why that's important.
That's right.
The CN is building a huge railroad next to the BNSF and UP in Joliet, in that area, so they'll be able to take freight directly. So what does the inland port mean? This is just for my viewers. So when you come in there, you don't have to clear customs until it gets to the inland port. Then if they want to go through a box, they can go through the box. So it comes in there. So you're railing it from anywhere in Mexico. It can go directly into Chicago. It sits there, then they clear customs. And then it can continue to train into Canada, or they could deliver it or so forth. So I just want to explain that because you went over it fast. And I just want to make sure some of my viewers are just truckers. They don't really deal with intermodal. My background is intermodal. So I want everyone to understand that. So, all right. So back to you.
Let's just expanding a little bit on that. I spent a lot of time in Manzanillo, Mexico, and also in Lázaro Cárdenas. So Lázaro Cárdenas has been, you know, and that's where Kansas City Southern primarily operates out of Lázaro Cárdenas. Lázaro Cárdenas has been a lot of investment, a lot of, you know, opportunity from that port because they've been expanding and developing that port versus Manzanillo. Manzanillo it has a little constraints in terms of the line haul of the line that comes out of the port because they only have one. So Kansas City Southern saw that opportunity. They went ahead and expanded on Lázaro Cárdenas. And now a lot of the products are coming via Lázaro Cárdenas and to San Luis Potosí, or the ranch of San Luis Potosí, and back into the United States.
Well, no, I think it makes sense. I am very aware that the rail freight, the moment you load it and you put it on the rail in Mexico, it is submitted to customs. So if they wanted to run it across the border, it does not matter. When it gets to the port location, it doesn't have to be El Paso. When it gets to Chicago, they can clear it then. They do the same thing from California. You can take something off the rail in LA, put it on a railroad, and take it all the way to Chicago and then clear customs at the inland port there. But you must be at inland port in order to do that. And Kansas City and Chicago are both. So all right. Okay. So let's keep moving. Okay. Are there there are now restrictions on driving in the U.S. and being able to speak English. So how does it affect a Mexican carrier? That equipment is good enough to drive across the border. Does that affect them coming into the U.S. since, and I'm not saying they don't speak English. I don't want to stereotype anyone. They may speak perfect English. But is there any, do you see that affecting that in any way,
shape, or form? So I find that very interesting, you know, when you ask in drivers that domicile in Mexico to speak English in the United States, which they should. Let's make that clear. They should, right? They should be able to read the signs. They should be able to go ahead and speak English and communicate with an officer. I mean, I am a proponent of an English first language, right?
Yep.
I am bilingual, but we are in the United States. So I have to make sure that
I
can communicate and move on, right? But at the same token is that I separate one from the other in terms of English speaking and also safety, because safety is a primary factor, right? So. The drivers that are coming across, they're very proficient. So how does that affect? Yes, affects at the driver's psyche, not necessarily the company or the driver's psyche coming across and you know, being fearful or being detained and perhaps their visa being removed, because a lot of them have you know, B1 visas, you know, so they worry about, that's their livelihood. You know, they come across the border, then they're driving 1,500 miles to Detroit, you know, to Detroit from Laredo, and they definitely worry about something happening, getting stopped, and their visa being revoked. So that's how it affects the driver's psyche, and also obviously the company, because you don't want to lose a very proficient, very experienced driver because of that.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. So the visa they have, and I'm not a visa expert, so you know it's been like, is allow them to run freight into the U.S.,
correct?
Right? Is that, okay. Then I can't see. I think some people are, again, it may affect their psyche, but I don't think if your visa is to run freight, to Detroit, to wherever, and you have a bill of lading in a truck going to wherever with a Mexican plate, right. I don't think you got anything to worry about. I think you got to get the hysteria out of your head. There are people right. on visas that didn't, that came across and did not leave that should be right. concerned. But if you're right. currently under a trucking visa with a load from Mexico going to Detroit, driving right. a Mexican truck, I don't think they're not looking for you because, hey, where are you? Hey, I'm on my way back, brother. I'm going down I-55 on my way back to
I-35.
I mean, whatever it is. So yeah. I understand I'm a mess with the psyche, but that's not under no circumstances is that an issue. I think if you've overstayed your visa, if a guy drove a truck across, maybe he left the truck and he's now living here, that guy should be concerned. But under a load that your visa is for, great. I personally don't believe that. I hate to, I don't want to get into politics in this, but right. I don't believe that person should be concerned, especially if they're proficient enough. When I say proficient enough, enough to read signs and to communicate, here's my law book, here's my this. I don't need them to be able to make speech or be as fluent as you to be able to talk on this podcast. I just need you to be proficient enough to be able to know what the signs mean
right.
And understand when a cop comes and asks you a question, can right. I see your bill of lading? Well, here's my bill of lading. So
right.
again,
right.
yeah, I'm not that concerned with that. I just want to, I didn't know the number. I like to make it simple for people. Right. If there are 100 drivers crossing the border, I know there's more, play along
right.
with me.
Right.
How many of you're saying all 100 are proficient enough to get through on speaking English? That would be my question. How many of the 100 would you think are fine?
On that question, I really can't put a number, but I would okay. say maybe a good 50%.
Okay, yeah. So that's my worry is, are you going to lose 50% of your power? And is that become an issue? Because I do know Mexican drivers deliver stuff across the border.
Right.
And that's something where I say, well, how do we replace this? This is some place all the way. Listen, where do you go to the, they went to Nebraska and they bus people that are there illegally for working in the plant. Well, 80% of workers were illegal. So you have to have a answer. And I'm not getting into a conversation. This is right or wrong. I'm not in government. Someone's elected, right. they do whatever. But you do have to replace those people. It's right. my thing is someone has to replace them or the rates are going to go through the roof. So that's right. my thing is, what is the, is there a plan for that? Is it, you know, I don't understand.
I've been in the industry for a long time. I'm from Laredo and I know the big players when it relates to trucking. So yeah. some of those companies, the reputable companies, you know, the ones that have been in business for 20, 25 years, And they're really stepping it up when training the drivers. I mean, yeah. no one likes to see a fail, you know, assessment on highway. No one wants to see a fail assessment of the FMCA, right?
Inspection, yes.
So there inspections and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's their livelihood, you know. So they do a great job of training the drivers and also maintaining their equipment. I mean, the fallacy is that sometimes people think that equipment come across the border is not, you know, it's not something at the par. But the reality is that the companies, they operate on the north and south, they do a tremendous job to go ahead and keep their equipment up to standards.
Well, this is weird. Let me tell you where that fallacy comes from. It has nothing to do with even Mexican carriers. Let me mm-hmm. tell you, if you go to a corporation, like you told, a big company with 1,000 mm-hmm. trucks, those trucks are probably meant to maintain. The average trucking company is about 7 to 9 trucks. I guarantee you, I can go anywhere in the U.S. and find a 5-truck carrier that's not maintaining their trucks. That's just the nature of it. So it's going to be the same thing in Mexico. Isn't that picking the Mexicans? It's just the nature of the beast.
Right.
The high reputable people you're talking about has 400, 500, 600 trucks in a process to train and to teach people how to, you need to be able to speak this much English.
Right.
Great. But the guy with 4 trucks, and I'm not picking on him. There's some that do an amazing job with 4 or 5 trucks. So don't you guys come at me at that. But there are several that lack the infrastructure to do that right. on both sides. This is not right. just Mexico. Here in the U.S., I can show you inspections. I remember I worked with the state police in here in Illinois. And right. I can tell you, the failed inspections, almost 90% of them were for carriers under 100 trucks.
Correct.
What does that tell you?
That's correct.
They save it every dime. So, yeah. And not to pick in small truckers. Small truckers is a lot of who we are.
Not also,
everyone knows who they do if they're doing it right or not.
So. Right, right. So truckers, that companies that are, you know, that are in the business and that get smart about, they develop their own shops. You know, they start putting their own shops, their own mechanic, things like that. So you can be ahead of the curve. You know, I worked for a small trucking company out of Canada recently, and a tremendous job maintaining their equipment. A company that I was in Toronto, and tremendous job. You know, the owner of the company was actually started as a mechanic. So, I mean, those small companies, they do due diligence in maintaining their equipment, putting their stuff together and coming across the border. And that was a Canadian carrier for that instance, you know. So on the Mexico side, it's even easier because you have a better turn on the labor and trying to work on the trucks in the Mexico side. Many carriers do that. Many carriers have the ability to take their trucks across and go ahead and get some repairs on it, you know. Especially smaller carriers. Smaller carriers can do that.
All right. Well, with that said, you know, we're coming to the end of the Hall of Fame. As always, before I close, I give you an opportunity to tell the closer anything you would like, a little bit about yourself, a little self-plug, whatever you want.
So, thank you.
Cesar, I'll turn it over to you. What do you got in closing?
Well, thank you. Well, thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I will say this is the first one I ever done. For the record. I do presentations online or whatever on the Zoom or the team meetings or whatever, but I appreciate it. I'm an experienced transportation manager, entrepreneur, and I'm looking for your business. So either or as a contract or anything like that, you know, we can help you out with the cross-border freight and try to develop your supply chains in a way that it makes sense, especially for automotive. I think that they need help. And also on the food items and things like that, we'll look for expanding right now. And I'm thinking about relaunching my company. I'm not sure yet, looking for money, but you know, it takes time. So I'm taking it one at a time and looking forward to help whoever needs help with Mexico.
All right. And that wraps up the Hall of Fame podcast with Cesar Marquez. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.